You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to episode 291 of Talking Chop Podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland. It is Sunday evening, June the 6th, and I am joined as often by the great Eric Cole, who now has power and internet. Welcome, Eric, to the podcast.
I'm so happy. I had a tree fall down like a mile from my house, and it took, like, I was without power and internet for like 5 hours. I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to do the podcast or if I had to do it on the phone. And now I get to talk about the Hawks with Brad Roland. Right, that's what we're doing, right?
I guess we could do a Hawks podcast. I'd be, okay. Yeah. I mean, listen, there's been lots of Hawks developments. If you're a Hawks fan, you will know that. If not, that's okay, and we'll leave it there. But it's been fun to cover the Hawks recently, and you know, to be positive, Eric, you know, last week's show, Scott and I, it was one of those shows that no one wants to do, and we kind of had to just get through it. This time around, we're talking about baseball and the Braves. I will be optimistic. The Braves had a winning week. They were 4-3, and 4-3 for a team that was in the NLCS not that long ago. May not seem like much, but 4-3 is a marked improvement over most of the season.
Absolutely. It's been a good week for Atlanta sports, and, you know, nothing bad happened at all, especially not today.
Something like that, yeah. Listen, the Hawks won, the Braves won, the Falcons did a thing that we don't want to talk about. But, yeah, positive vibes today, Eric. I've decided positive vibes today. I'm going to talk myself out of this as well, I'm sure, during the podcast.
Positive energy is being sent out into the universe.
There you go. So yeah, we'll dive in here, you know, as we always do, get through the results, and I'm sure we'll have a few sidebars along the way. But a 4-3 week, obviously they opened the week up with a 4-game split, and certainly a roller coaster ride in those 4 games. We'll start on the positive side. I will say the bullpen, with 2 notable exceptions this week, did its job. And I feel like we talk about the bullpen all the time, but I think we'll spend some actual time on the bullpen on this episode because Shane Green is now on the big league club. He didn't pitch today, but he's now with the club. And also, like, it was basically the polar opposites. Like, for instance, Monday, they were awesome. They allowed 1 hit in 4 innings. They were also awesome on Saturday, allowing 1 hit and 1 walk in 4 innings. And today they did the job again, but in the middle, Tuesday, it wasn't good. They had a blow up on Saturday. Oh, no, not Saturday. Sorry, Friday against the Dodgers. So it's been hit and miss. And I feel like we should address the bullpen because all the time I get tweets. I sometimes send tweets about how frustrating the bullpen has been this season. And I think it's true, but I will just give you this number, jump off with Eric. Coming into today, so it's not been updated. It probably would go down a little bit, I guess. The bullpen was 4th worst in baseball in ERA at 4.80. Does that surprise you in a positive sense or a negative sense? Like, would you have guessed it was worse or better than that?
Because I think they've been trending largely in the right direction. It feels about right.
I tend to agree. Stadium. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I think that's, you know, kind of about right because I felt like for a while they were so bad. And it was hard to, we've talked about this before, it's hard to point to, like, one guy in particular that's, like, you know, like, really dragging down the numbers, you know what I mean? Especially since after the changes they've kind of made over the course of the last few weeks with, you know, various, you know, DFAs and adding guys to the mix and, you know, trying other guys in different spots. It seems like that feels about right in terms of what their collective contributions has been. But I will say that I feel like they've been trending up. What has been concerning, and again, we've been talking about this for weeks now, is, like, I don't feel like that the usage of the best guys in that bullpen has matched the situations that the Braves have been in. And I think that there has been games that it made it less likely that the Braves are going to win. I'm not going to say that they would have won these games if, like, you know, the, like, if Matzik had been in a game where, you know, like you're only down by a run and they end up scoring three later on in the game, because, you know, there's too many other moving parts later on in games that, you know, I don't know that for sure, but I feel like their usage has been subpar. And when your usage is subpar and you have guys that are struggling for whatever reasons, that has kind of made it worse. But in terms of like the overall ERA, that feels about right. You know what I mean? Like there's certainly some guys who are a little bit more adventurous than others. Every time Luke Jackson's in a game, I just have started the game on Twitter. Like, what things are going to happen that we know are going to happen? He's going to have at least one runner in scoring position. It's likely that that guy will be stranded despite being there with like one out. But he always makes it more interesting than I want it to be. So, you know, and there's a lot of that that it just seems like it's always, it's not easy a lot of times. But there were games this week where it looked like it was easy. The bullpen was just in autopilot and they just got they just handled business. And that was good. That was really nice to see.
Yeah. I mean, I think Saturday is the best one for me anyway. Like, I think even the beat writers were talking about this in the moment, but you roll through the five guys, and you could lump Jackson in there or not, but he pitched in the game. But you go Minter, Jackson, Matzik, Martin, Smith, and they were pretty dominant in a row in that game against the Dodgers offense. And like, it's not gonna always be that way. I mean, even the best bullpens, I think people kind of selectively remember the stuff that happens or doesn't happen. Like, even when they were dominant last year, they had some moments when they lost games, and that's just gonna happen when it's any bullpen is gonna blow up sometimes. But you could see a little glimpse of what it was supposed to be on Saturday. And, you know, small wins, and then Shane Green, I guess we could talk about at some point later on. But it was sort of on my mind because as we started with Monday, because they were good on Monday, and there you go. I will say this as we go back to Monday. First of all, I'm very pro Charlie Morton. I think we were on this podcast. Charlie just, for some reason, has an inning every game where he can't do anything correctly. And I don't know what it is about Charlie Morton this year, but maybe because he's old and he just like kind of loses it, but he'll be good for 5 2/3 and then just kind of implode. It's kind of funny, actually.
So I actually was looking at Charlie's numbers before the podcast started, and like, I actually was surprised at how decent he's been.
Yeah.
Like, if you just kind of look at his game log, it looks okay, because like, watching Charlie Morton starts is not, I don't feel, again, that's just more of a feel thing.
Well, yeah, his ERA is 4.21. Like, he's already been worth more than a win this season. Like, and I think that would surprise people that didn't look closely at his numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he had one, that horrific start against Philadelphia, which has made his numbers look significantly worse. Beyond that, he's been fine. You know what I mean?
But not great, but fine. Right,
yeah, he's been fine. You know what I mean? But you also, like, you are right in that he seems to always have these innings where he'll get some batted ball luck, and, you know, he'll give up some hard contact, or he'll, like, you know, the two walks that he gives up in the game will be in the same inning, and it just gets, again, just more interesting than you'd like it for me, especially from a guy that you, like, this Braves team has really needed to lean on to get innings from. And I was actually prepared to say, you know, like, they haven't really kind of gotten that innings eater out of him that they were kind of hoping to get. But as it turns out, they kind of have.
He's pitching. I mean, he's been out there. Yeah. I mean.
Yeah. Well, no, but I mean, he's, you know, other than that start where he got run out of Philadelphia, I mean, he's 6 innings, 7 innings, 6 innings, 7 innings. It's kind of what he does. You know, he didn't do that on Monday necessarily, because again, that fourth inning was a little bit rough. But beyond that, I mean, again, not his finest effort, I will certainly say that. But he was okay. You know, not certainly didn't cost him a game, that's for sure.
No. Yeah. And that's what I mean. It's not. Not to do the whole Charlie Morton extravaganza here, but I feel like, and I'm guilty of this too, and maybe not because I'm looking through things in a positive lens with him because I'm rooting for it to succeed, but I think if you asked a typical Braves fan right now if Charlie Morton was like a bust or something, a lot of them would say yes. And I get that.
How much money he's making.
Yeah, and I, you know, this is the same thing we always talk about, but, you know, I think for what he's making, even if he just does this the rest of the season, is it a huge success? No, but it's also not a failure. It's kind of like Dallas Keuchel. It's like very Dallas Keuchel vibes right now with Charlie Morton. Like,
I'm with you there.
No one's acting like he was awesome, but also no one reasonably would say that Charlie Morton is like busting. Like, he's been totally fine. Like, he's on pace for like a 2.5 win season, which is not what you wanted necessarily. But I think if you're being honest, that's kind of like worth it for what you paid him to just like fill that spot and not have to worry about it a ton. I mean, it's still early June. Like, there's a long way to go here, but I feel like that's just I was looking at his numbers this week, and I was so similar on that myself. Like, you know what? He's kind of been okay, but not great. And yet it just feels like it's like one 10 minute period in every start when it's not going well.
Yeah, just things go off the rails in a hurry for sure. And so, and again, sometimes like he recovers and gets out of it, and sometimes, you know, games get a little bit more interesting. But you know, again,
so they
overall, you know, they won that game 5-3. I'm fine.
Yeah, you win on Monday. It doesn't bite you. Obviously, a home run by Ronald Acuna, who is still pretty good. By the way, he homered again on Tuesday. I think he's again pretty good at baseball. This is one that hurts. Is the Tuesday loss? So it ends up being 11-6. But Strasburg, who always loves pitching against the Braves in Atlanta, he pitched an inning and a third, and the Braves lost this game by five runs. Yeah. So if I told you only that, the only information I gave you, Eric, is Strasburg pitches an inning and a third. I think we would have both said Braves win a large portion of the time. They did not win because Max Fried was not very good either. 8 base runners and 5 earned runs in 3 2/3 for Max. Fortunately, he didn't have the opportunity to bounce back today on Sunday, which was nice. But there were some rumblings happening on Tuesday when Max was not pitching well.
That's generally how it works. You know, all of a sudden everyone's like, you know, this guy's a bust. You know, we need to rehaul the pitching staff. I've gotten more than one tweet and or DM saying that the Braves need to consider just trading away half their roster at the trade deadline and starting over again. You know, these are the kinds of things that happen after a tough loss against a situation they should have won that game, right? And, you know, Strasburg is very clearly dealing with some sort of injury. He was like fastball velocity and spin was way, way down. It's like, obviously something wasn't right with him, so they get him out of there. Seems like, you know, when Strasburg's in Atlanta, you know, he leaves there's something that's always bothering him that feels like he needs to leave the game. So, you know, that's just kind of how it goes. But when, like, the Nationals bullpen comes in, and I wouldn't say shuts down the Braves because they certainly gave up some runs, but, you know, kind of put together enough of a quality, whereas the Braves bullpen was very not good in that game. Again, a frustrating situation, especially when you get like a really good game from Ronnie. Like, well, you know, I think he had 3 hits and another home run in that game. And like, you feel like in games where you put up 6 runs, this isn't a team that can afford to give those kinds of games away. And unfortunately, it just, you know, didn't work out.
Yeah. I mean, they were hanging around there, and I don't know. It wasn't just one of those games that nobody enjoyed. We can move on from that one. Wednesday, Eric, I know we always love this discussion, but the Drew Smyly discourse returned in full force.
Speaking of the experience.
On Wednesday, 9 base runners in 4 1/3 innings for Mr. Smyly. And the Braves ended up losing, of course, 5-3. He actually only allowed 3 earned runs.
Somehow.
But if you watch that start, and listen, I've tried to defend Drew Smyly at times. If you watch that start, he was pretty terrible in that game, and he got very, very lucky to allow 3 runs. And Smiley's ERA now, by the way, is 5.98, and it has not been an unlucky 5.98. His FIP is 6.29. He is firmly in the negative Fangraphs WAR. This is the stat for me. He's allowing 2.7 home runs per 9.
That's not good.
That's not going to get it done, Drew. Listen, I'm not a pitching expert. There's been some talk about like his pitch selection. Do you have an opinion on this? Like, I guess a lot of what made him interesting last season, he's kind of gone away from what I gather. And again, I'm not a pitching expert. But it feels like they've kind of tinkered and it has not gone well. And this is something I actually want to ask you more broadly, even beyond Smyly, is I think Rick Kranitz is not the most popular person on Braves Twitter right now, even for people that I think are the smart people on Braves Twitter. And I wonder what you think of like the pitching approach, which is more of a long-term podcast, I understand. But with regard to Smyly, like, this is not the first time this has happened where a guy's shown some stuff and then he kind of just doesn't show the same stuff in Atlanta. And that kind of gets you, even if it's not fair all the time, that gets you to a like, why aren't the Braves doing X conversation? I don't know.
So I have some specific thoughts. I think that the quality of both Smiley's fastball and his curveball has gone down. I think that, you know, when he has that curve working and he can get guys to swing at it out of the zone is when he kind of gets those strikeout numbers that we really like out of him. But his fastball is often kind of flat and very hittable, and he's not throwing it as hard as he was, you know, last year, right? Like, and again, that might have just been a, you know, he was able to let it rip and, you know, he was only being asked to throw 2 times through the order, which, again, we get to the usage of the bullpen and we get to understanding what a guy's strengths are and what they're not. Is that, you know, Smyly was not a third time through the order pitcher, even when he was good, right? So that the Braves just continually run him out there and just go, you know what, we'll keep running him out there and see how this goes. It just doesn't go well. It just doesn't. And they just he's just not that guy, because now he's throwing these hanging curveballs and guys have gotten multiple looks at it, and all of a sudden they start teeing off on him. And he was already not great during that ball game. You know what I mean? He was very, very fortunate that he only gave up 3 earned runs. But speaking broadly about Kranitz, even going back to 2019, there were rumblings like amongst like Braves media, amongst like the Braves organization, is that Kranitz might be better served in some sort of like advisory role towards younger players that isn't a pitching coach. Because I don't think he's necessarily the guy that's coming up with pitching game plans, and I don't think he's adding much to like the actual coaching of mechanics and coaching of executing the Braves game plan in terms of where they what pitches they want thrown and where they want them thrown. I don't think he's adding much to that. Now, I have some broader concerns about how the Braves feel like these are the pitches that they want their pitchers to throw, and this is where they want them thrown consistently, because that's what the data tells them, because I don't think that necessarily speaks to the strengths of their pitchers always. But broadly speaking, I think that what Kranitz is good at is that he can go out to the mound, and like it does seem like that there's a broadly accepted thing that he is pretty good about getting guys settled down, and like again that kind of that person-to-person interaction.
Very Bravesy. That's very yeah, Bravesy right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yes. But I don't think he's necessarily good at the, you know, working on, like, making adjustments in between starts and things like that. I don't think that's a strength of his. I personally would think that they think he should move on. And I'm a big fan of, like, AAA's pitching coach, you know, is a guy that would be a guy that I would certainly be targeting or looking at as an option. But overall, Kranitz does not do much for me as a pitching coach. Now, that said, coaching staffs at the major league level have a marginal impact in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, same thing with a bullpen coach, right? You know, like, most Braves fans wouldn't know who the Braves bullpen coach is, but we also know the Braves bullpen hasn't been performing well. So, you know, you get these, you know, calls for this guy to, you know, get fired and bring someone else in. But I don't think that those are, like, magic bullet solutions on the coaching side either.
Yeah, that's all well said, I think. I didn't mean to get down that rabbit hole either. I just felt like that was a discussion that was really happening. Not that it hasn't before, but in full force around the middle of the week with regard to Smiley in particular. And obviously, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of it falls on Smiley. It's not like we're excusing that.
Yeah, he's the biggest
problem. He's not pitching well, and he's not pitching well, and that's not gone very well to this point in time. So no excuses there, but wanted to at least bring it up. Last thing before we get to a break. Thursday, they end up winning in the matinee getaway day game. And this is where I defer to you heavily, because Tucker Davidson pitched for the second time this season and it was good. He walked 5, but other than that, he pitched well. And Snicker said after the start that he is on track to pitch again this week. Prospect maven that you are, talk to me about Tucker Davidson. Were you pleased with the performance, and what should people expect for his next start?
I was largely pleased. Tucker has always had these starts where he walks a bunch of guys, but those have been much less frequent this year, and I think that the command overall has been significantly better out of him. And it doesn't look like it feels like the guys are having a lot of trouble picking up his fastball and picking up the breaking ball in ways that allow them to make any sort of meaningful contact, and that's a big deal. Then the walks don't matter quite as much. If you're walking 5 guys in a game, you can't do that. Like, that's not sustainable. And I don't think that that's what he is. He's been much better other than that game this season. So overall, I'm like, really happy. I'm happy they're giving him another start. It's worth mentioning, too, that his kind of schedule has been kind of all over the place, because he starts for Atlanta, then they send him back down to the Gwinnett, and then, like, he was on track to start, but then they had to move some things around, and he starts, like, a game, like, a few days later than he normally would. So I understand if maybe the command wasn't quite as crisp as it normally is. And under those circumstances, based on what he was having to deal with, kind of moving up and down the minors and still putting together, pitching into the sixth inning and not giving up an earned run and striking out 5 batters, sign me up for that every time. And I'm really glad that they're giving him a chance to kind of earn a regular spot in that rotation, because frankly, I think he's earned it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, lack of options too, but I do think that he is at least intriguing. This is not like some, you know, cross your fingers and pray plug and play option. He has some actual upside and talent, and obviously you and the minor league guys have been talking about him for a long time, but at least a pretty interesting first start. They won that game in part because of him, which is always helpful. Should also mention that Ozzie Albies hit 3 hits on Thursday, and Ronnie reached 3 times, and Dansby came alive a little bit with a 2-run homer. I want to just mention this. I think Dansby got some attention, and with good reason, for having the sort of heat up a little bit there. Ozzie's been overlooked on this podcast, at least by me, this season. And after kind of a wobbly start, he's up to a 123 WRC plus. Like, he's been quite good for, like, I don't know, 6 weeks now, maybe more, to the point where he's not quite in, like, Ronnie territory this season, but he's having a better year than Freddie to this point, which I think was not expected. Yeah. He's been good.
I mean, again, he started to look like Mike Trout again against lefties. That always helps.
It does.
He's Ozzie's just incredibly good. He's always gonna be streaky, right? He's just gonna have these stretches where he's just like, wow, he's like the cog that's making this offense move. It's also worth mentioning, I mean, and Dansby too, he's been really kind of on a bit of a tear himself too, after again a pretty awful start.
Is he ever streaky? I'm not sure that ever happens with Dansby. I sent sort of a snarky message to Scott on Twitter this week when he said something about Dansby. I was like, oh, the first time that Atlanta shortstop's ever been inconsistent. It never happens with Dansby. Sorry.
or Atlanta shortstops just in general, right?
I guess that's true. You know, yeah.
I mean, like, you know, we saw Andrelton Simmons be a good hitter for like 3 straight weeks where he was like no one could get him out.
And we saw some of those
swings that he takes the rest of the time.
It's actually actually not a bad comp, honestly, for like what they did at the plate. And also, to your Dansby point, he's up to a 97 WRC plus for the season. And given where he started,
I would not have guessed that.
Yeah, but I mean, that's basically all of this like week and a half recently. But you know, I think you got to kind of take that for what we've seen so far. He's slugging .448 to buoy his on base percentage, which is still sub 300. But listen. He was like in the 50s a couple weeks ago, so that tells you that he's been pretty hot.
Absolutely. And one thing that nice note about Ronnie, other than the fact that he's obviously just really good at baseball, is that it seems like either the Braves are letting him run more or he's running more. One of the two. He's stealing a bunch of bases, which isn't the best news for yours truly, because I made a bet with the internet that if he gets 40-40 that I have to get a tattoo.
You did.
But, you know,
and listen, everyone's rooting against you too, including me. Everyone's rooting against you, which I appreciate.
Everyone is.
Yes.
I will honor that. I have no problems honoring that. And I even said something along the lines of, you know, I'm not too concerned because they're not really letting Ronnie run on a consistent basis. But, well, this past week, he's been running kind of wild and often.
That was a mistake of a sentiment for you to share in public. I'll say that. All right. Listen, I will say you are still a big favorite. He has 11 right now. That's not, I mean, he's not on pace to give you some credit. He's not on pace to make it. Now, could he do it? Absolutely, because he's not a human being. But you're in good shape, I think.
I feel good of where I am at right now. I feel like 40 home runs might be a lock, but
it's not a lock. But certainly, I think he's favored to hit 40 home runs with where he is now. Yeah. He's slugging 600, by the way. 598 slugging for the season.
Yeah, and he's actually felt like he's like cooled down a bit over the last few weeks, and you know, one torrid stretch from him, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm gonna have even more people tweeting at me. So, you know, but again, good. I feel like I'm in a good spot with that bet, but you know, one way or the other, you know, I will honor the terms of that bet for sure.
As you should. Anyway, that was a good way to end that series. You know, non-disastrous. Obviously, it would have been better if they won the series, but to not lose three in a row the way that they, you know, the middle of the week went, was a bit of a blessing going into the weekend in the Dodgers series, which we'll get into in a moment. But Eric, we have to break now to hear from our sponsors. So hold on tight. We'll be right back.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity, but giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
All right, Eric, let us discuss the Dodgers series. But first, I want to ask you a question to pull on your expertise again. Not only did we talk about Tucker Davidson, but Christian Pache is not in the majors right now. And I meant to ask you this already, but I'll ask you it now. They've activated him. He is playing, but he is playing in Gwinnett. And if you told me preseason that he was going to be active and playing, but the Braves were going to be playing Abraham Almonte most days and Adrianza and Ender, we would have been losing our minds. But I think generally people are not upset that Pache's in the minors. But I'm kind of just asking you for a general status update, because I saw some positivity about him in Gwinnett over the weekend from, I think, Gaurav and other people. But where are you at with Pache now that he is healthy and playing again?
I'm happy that he's in Gwinnett. I'm not going to – there's no glossing over the fact that, you know, he did not look like a major league ready hitter this season. He just didn't. And that's the thing that's going to happen sometimes, right? Just like a guy, you know, he comes up in the playoffs last year, impresses a lot of people with his plate discipline and all that stuff, something like he was working on constantly at the alternate site and it was paying dividends. Then he comes into a brand new season. There's a little bit of tape on him and, you know, it's just kind of an entirely different season coming off an off season. And, you know, you know, batting 111 or whatever it was, isn't going to get the job done. So he gets hurt middle of May. He comes back. Just give him some time in Gwinnett. Surprisingly, his replacements in the outfield have not been terrible. I will say, like, Ender had looked pretty decent today. You know, Almonte has been surprisingly decent. Heredia continues to kind of surprise that he's being productive at all. It's working well enough right now that you don't need to push him. And this gives him a chance to kind of reset, get back to working on things at the plate while he doesn't have the, you know, the spotlight of having to produce in a major league lineup right now. And so far it's worked out. He was activated and he played his first game 1st of June. He's played 3 games since then. He's hit safely in all 3 of them, has 3 doubles over the course of those three games. You know, the strikeouts are still there a bit, but you know, in those 3 games, he hasn't drawn a walk, but we're talking about a super small sample size. The game over the weekend, he looked really good against Jacksonville. You know, had 3 hits in that game, couple of doubles, drove in a couple of runs, poking the ball the other way. These are all positive developments, right? You know, you want to give him a chance to succeed. And in the situation right now where the Braves don't, I don't want to say they don't need him, because at the end of the day, Ender Inciarte, Guillermo Heredia, and Abraham Almonte are getting regular at-bats on a major league roster. So I don't want to, like, discount the fact that they probably need some real quality in there for the long term. But those guys are holding things down well enough where it gives Pache some time to get right at the plate. And if you get him right at the plate, that plus, you know, at least be him passable or reasonable at the plate with his defense would go a long way for this team, because then you can kind of you move Ronnie out of center and you maybe put him back in right. All these things are good. And for the moment, give him some time. I'm all for it. I think that he didn't look ready. And, you know, I think the Braves made the right decisions that once he got healthy from that injury, just give him some time to get right at the plate. I'm all for it.
Yeah, that sounds right to me. And listen, I mean, Pache, no one could argue that he looked good at the plate in the majors.
No,
like, no one could make that argument. We're high on him. We still are. And I'll just remind everybody that he's 22 and not everybody comes up and just rakes. I know it happens more often these days than it used to happen. Obviously Ronnie did that, but, we tried to stress to people that Pache was not that level of offensive prospect. He's still a good prospect. He's still 22 years old and really talented, but he wasn't supposed to come up and mash. It was worse than expected, at least for me, but that's not a death sentence. Like, that he's still a very interesting player long term, and hopefully he'll find it in Gwinnett. But I wanted to make sure I asked you about, because he was back and healthy now, and I want to just gloss over because it's normally just the major league focus show, but he's a major league caliber player, so there we have it. We'll get into the weekend now. Obviously Friday's game was the least fun. The one bright spot maybe was Freddie Freeman homering in the first inning, his first home run since May 18th, which is wild, and almost as wild as his first RBI since May 22nd, which was, like, you know, almost 2 weeks between RBI for Freddie Freeman is very unusual.
Especially with Ronnie hitting in front of him.
Like. Yeah, I mean, it's funny. Like, he's had a pretty terrible stretch this season, and I say that, like, obviously grading on a curve, because I even described this earlier on the podcast. Like, he's been, you know, I said this about Ozzy, about how Freddie has been bad, all this stuff. Freddie being terrible in our eyes is Freddie with a 117 WRC plus on June 6th.
I would not have bet that number was that high, to be honest.
Well, and the reason why it is because he's still walking a ton. He has a 16% walk rate for the season, so his OBP is still almost 360, which is not like Freddie awesome, but like in the grand scheme of the current Major League Baseball, that is well above average. He's just not hitting the ball where people are not. His batting average is .229. So
yeah, every line drive that guy hits finds a glove. It's
yeah,
wild.
So it's a combination, and we could do the Freddie thing another time probably, but it's a combination of he's not been as good, just objectively, his batted ball profile, all that stuff has not been as good, and he's also been a little bit unlucky, I think. Like, his BABIP is .231, which is a career low by a lot. That's one metric for sure. It doesn't cover everything, but he's also not been his jovial self, all that stuff. We talked about this before, but I always wanted to mention that he did hit a home run on Friday, and he has been bad this season, but bad for him is still a player that is quite useful. It's just not himself. And Scott, I talked about this last week, but the Braves' current roster needs Freddie Freeman to be Freddie Freeman in all capital letters pretty badly, with all of the holes and losses between Ozuna and Darnold and even Soroka on the pitching side. They need Freddie to be Freddie, and he's just not quite been that. But obviously, the hope would be that he'll find his level as a superstar in the near future, because while he's still been pretty good this year, they need more from him, obviously.
No, I couldn't agree more, especially with the loss of Ozuna, which, you know, has been kind of weirdly glossed over by basically everyone in the Braves media.
Oh, okay. No, we're doing this now. I have one comment.
Okay.
Can we talk about the what was the phrase that was used on the broadcast the first night?
Injury limbo.
That was the one. That is
really bad.
That is unacceptable. I understand you're talking live on the air, but that's unacceptable to use that phrase. That's ridiculous. And we'll move on, but I wanted to make sure we always said how absurd that was. And it got attention to the point where it was on Awful Announcing. Joe Lucia has been on this podcast multiple times as a guest. Joe runs Awful Announcing. I will say this. If you are an announcer, most of the time, you don't want to be on Awful Announcing. And that was
no,
on Awful Announcing.
No, do not.
So.
Again, it's just, it feels like, look, we don't know the results of, like, there's a police investigation going on, you know, criminal legal proceedings. Baseball is going to be doing their own investigation. Like, obviously, speculating about what
that's,
should happen.
That's
happen.
Yeah,
like,
I agree. Injury limbo.
Let's
come
not
on.
Pretend. Let's not pretend that it just nothing happened and like an arrest didn't happen.
Injury
and there aren't some
particularly, limbo.
Yeah, particularly like pretty damning details, like in the police report.
Here's the thing. Like, we haven't talked about who it is. People know who it is. All you have to say is Ozuna's absence. You know, if there's a mandate somewhere to not talk about it, I guess I understand that. But all you need to say is Ozuna's not here, or Ozuna's absence, or, you know, the absence,
field troubles,
something other than injury limbo would have been a good thing to use. Anyway, yes, but as far as baseball is concerned, not having him, not having Darnold is not a small thing, and you know, you just need. It's a roster, as we discussed last week, that it's just not as good as it was supposed to be right now on paper. And they are benefiting from, like, Adrianza and Almonte, like, doing stuff. Contreras was hitting, and they have the pieces to fill it in. No one's saying that they're bad now. It's just they're not this star-studded roster that they had before. And we'll get into the standings in a second, but I just want to at least say that out loud. Like, they need Freddie. I mean, Acuna can only do so much. We talked about Ozzie being really good lately, but the one of the clearest ways to make this offense better is for Freddie Freeman to not even be the guy from last year. That guy's probably not like a full-time, like he was absurd. We said that at the time, but just be the guy from 2019. Like, just be a star.
Yeah.
You don't have to be Mike. Like last year he was like basically Mike Trout at the plate for the season.
Pretty much. Yeah.
That's not realistic, but what is realistic is where he was the 3 years before that, when he was just like a, you know, capital S star. And this year he's been more like, I'm not even sure what the comp is, like John Olerud. I don't know. I'm showing my age there.
John Olerud.
I'm showing my age there, but like someone who just walks a lot and like has a little bit of pop, but not a ton. And he's obviously better than this guy. We just need that to exist, I think.
Yeah, and if the Rays get that, I mean, like, they're already, like, with Freddie being in this state right now, they're scoring 5 runs a game.
Yeah, the offense has not been the problem this season. I mean, we talked about it a lot, but the offense has not been catastrophic by any means. It's been run prevention that's been the actual problem, but it would paper over a lot if Freddie. By the way, to that point, the Braves lead the division in runs scored by 30.
Yeah, healthily.
And they're also, I believe, like top 5 in the National League. Yeah, behind only the Reds, Giants, and Dodgers. So they're 4th in the National League in runs scored. So offense has not been the problem.
I would have never guessed the Giants were going to be on that list.
The Giants are still leading the NL.
I know. It's the weirdest thing. They also have
a plus 70 run differential. Anyway, we're down the rabbit hole, but I was reminded of that too. In fact, I looked at the standings. It's still early, but now that we're in June, we can look at the standings a little bit. And the wild card standings are wild because it's the Dodgers and the Padres at the top because the Giants are within the division. So it's like, oh yeah, the Padres and the Dodgers are not, neither of them are winning the division right now. That is not what we expected.
Yep, and the Padres got swept by the Cubs. I mean, like, I don't know what's going on.
They're still good, but man, that's weird. Anyway, the rest of Friday was not fun in that the Dodgers scored 8 runs in a single inning. And basically, the Braves had one bad inning this weekend. If the Braves had not had that implosion in the 5th on Friday, they might have swept the Dodgers. But they allowed 8 runs.
Very, very possible, yeah.
Yeah, so but they allowed 8 runs. It was Anderson at the first, gave up 2 runs. Then Newcomb walked 3 in a row, including 2 guys with the bases loaded. That's not going to do it. And then Grant Dayton, Dodgers legend, came in to allow a single and a double, and it suddenly was 8-1. And by the way, Dayton got put on the IL the next day. I don't have any analysis there. You know, I guess the good thing, if you want to find one, is that the guys who give up that 8-run inning are not the main guys. It's the supporting guys, your Newcombs and your Daytons. But Nuke. That was rough.
So I have some strong feelings about this inning, right? For starters, you know, people were talking about Ian Anderson, like punting that game or whatever. Those 2 runs were scored on, like, 2 fielder's choices that were hit a total of maybe 15.
Yeah, he was not bad in that game. He was not.
You know, going into that inning, doing that against the Dodgers, you take that every time, right? Like, Austin, like, flubs a short grounder and doesn't throw the ball to first. Because if he makes that play just to first instead of trying to throw home and, like, putting a ball square in the runner's back, like, then it's 2 outs with the pitcher up. And then Urias gets down a sack bunt that ends up being a perfect bunt, and then all hell breaks loose in this inning. My issue here, and again, that's just a 2-1 game, and this is something that I will continually harp about, is that in a 2-1 game where your offense consistently scores 5 runs a game, they haven't been doing it in later innings, but scoring 5 runs a game, you take that from your offense. You're only down 2-1. You're trying to put out a fire, and your answer to the question of who should I bring up out of the bullpen is Sean Newcomb. I do not understand this. I just don't. Newcomb is good and has been good in situations where he starts the inning and he can start clean. And, like, he's put up some decent relief appearances in those situations. When there are base runners on, and this is true when he was in the minors, as soon as there's runners on and as soon as, like, there's a crisis that's actually in play, he is not the guy you want. And in a 1-run game, you want guys that you can trust to get outs. You want to get out of that inning. If they wanted to put him out there the next inning, wouldn't have bothered me in the slightest. But when you have runners on in a situation where you've already kind of given up a lead and a lot of weird things are happening, he is not your guy. He just isn't. And
yeah.
Snicker has consistently treated a 1-run deficit the same way he would treat an 8-run deficit in terms of who he selects to put out on that mound.
You know my rant about this.
And then, so he walks 3 guys in a row, looks awful, and then goes, you know what? Now we're down by a few more runs. Let's bring in Grant Dayton.
I mean,
it was really bad. And, like, it was a very frustrating situation.
If you had to choose one thing, like, just one specific thing tactically that Snicker does that drives me insane, it probably is this. It probably is the fact that he punts games. You know, maybe punts too strong, but he does not treat leverage situations properly, in my view, when they are losing. He just, for whatever reason, I don't want to overstate it, but it's something we've said a ton on this podcast. You know, if you're down 2 in the 5th, like, that's not the time to bring in your worst reliever. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not.
Yeah.
Like, and he treats it like they're down 7 and they're down 2 or down 1 even sometimes, and they'll do that. But if they're up 6... Like, up 6 is a lower leverage spot than down by 2. And I just don't know if he understands that.
and up by 6, it is, I would say, likely that we are going to see one of the 3 best relievers on the roster in that game. Like,
yeah,
likely,
no, I mean,
very likely.
That's a Bobby thing, too. Bobby used to do the same thing. Like, he would, unless it was a comical lead, like, if you're up 10, maybe he doesn't do this. But if it's 5 or 6, like, that's not high leverage. You should try to not use your best guys up 6. But it's just the opposite. And again, we've done this a number of times, but that wasn't, I know you and I talked that night on Friday about this and you were steamed about it. And I understand. I mean, it's frustrating. Cause look, would they have lost this game anyway? You know, maybe for sure. It's not like they were gonna like, you're not favored to win. And that's the, I think that's part of the reason why people don't understand this is that if you're already losing, people assume you're going to lose. So when you lose by more, people don't really get outraged by that. But it's a leverage play. It's a percentage play. It's a win probability play. But it's hard to sometimes put your math hat on and realize, all right, we actually have about a 30% chance to win this game. If we put this guy in, it'll stay at 30. If we put this guy in, it might go down to 20 because this guy is a lot worse than this guy. And that's like hard to comprehend. I don't know. I'm obviously just throwing out numbers willy-nilly there. But it's just it is a maddening thing if you are trying to just do the math. And not even just pure math, but just like the common sense of this team's like, you know, in previous years has prided itself on being this comeback team that never quits and never says die. And I get that. They've had a ton of great comebacks in the last couple of years. But it's kind of incongruous because they almost punt games sometimes when they are winnable still. I don't know.
And it was worse because they scored 4 runs later in this game. If they you did. Just get out of that inning with just score giving up 3 runs or whatever, like even if another run, like you give up a hit in that inning, right? But you end up getting out of it. And, you know, you get instead what you get is, again, a 7-run deficit is really hard. They scored 4 runs in the 8th inning. If they only give up,
yeah,
again, 3 runs in that inning,
I mean,
then you and things kind of go to plan the rest of the way, which they only gave up 1 run the rest of the way, the Braves win that game.
Yeah.
And again, there's a lot of moving parts as like who you would use and who wouldn't and
yes.
like how the rest of that game would go. But and I understand that, but put your team in position to win games because right now the offense is scuffling late in games. Your bullpen is a little bit iffy. At least give yourself a good chance as opposed to like – stacking the deck against yourself, and it's frustrating.
And again, we wouldn't do this kind of rant on one game in a non-playoff setting. It's just that this has been a theme for a while,
all year. And then there's the double switches and all this weird stuff where, you know, like these double switches where like the pitcher ends up coming up sooner, and like why these double switches are happening, you know, like why is it more desirable to have this hitter in this situation versus the guy you already had in there. These are all these are things I are hard for me to kind of wrap my head around, but that's the one thing where it's been consistent. It's just that, you know, when in close games, those games, especially, particularly if the Braves are losing, I haven't really seen as much when the games are tied, although it's happened before when the games are tied. It's just when they're like down a run,
yep.
it's treated like the game's over.
If you're down 1, here comes Jacob Webb, and that's what you're going to get.
And before anyone yells at me about bashing on Snitker, a lot of this is solved by these bullpen guys not being bad.
Well,
right?
Yeah, like, I mean, that's obviously implied.
Newcomb's complete inability to throw a strike in that inning, not even close. You know, throw a strike, make them put the ball in play, and let your defense do something.
And that's the damage of, and this is, everybody's playing under the same rule, but that's also the damage of the 3-batter minimum, because we all knew that was going to go badly before he got to the 3rd batter, but you can't dig him out. It's just, he's out there, and Godspeed. Anyway, we can move off that game because the rest of the weekend's more positive. Saturday, they win despite 4 errors. They made 2 in the first inning, and they were lucky to only allow 1 run. Then they put 5 on Kershaw in the 3rd, a couple of 2-run doubles by Ozzie and Dansby, we talked about earlier. They did give some back with 4 singles and a double play and then another error in the 4th inning. But Almonte gives them some insurance, as we talked about at the top of the podcast. The bullpen was awesome on Saturday, but not every day that you win a relatively close game with 4 errors against the Dodgers. That's not what you would have drawn up, but it got there.
No, that Dodgers team, I know that they're not like as dominant as we thought they were going to be this year.
They're still good.
But, like giving them 3 outs is just like every time it happens. Like every time I saw an error, I'm just like, this is the team that you really, really like. You jump on a lead on them. This is like the last team you want to like give an extra batter to. You know, let guys get on base and let them, because they'll punish you. Every guy in that lineup is capable of like taking you deep, or you know, making a 1-run inning turn into a 5-run inning. Like that's just what they do. It's what they did to the Braves in the playoffs. It's like every at bat, you know, it felt like in that playoff series, every at bat was 14 pitches. And you know, when you get a chance and you get a ground ball and you get a play where you can get an out, and you instead, you know, result in giving up runs, it's just, it feels bad. But fortunately, like, you know, again, Ozzie and Dansby, that up the middle defense in the infield has also been really performing well at the plate right lately. I was happy to see Almonte get a solo home run too.
Yep.
Just to kind of like, again, I'm not like super enthusiastic about Abraham Almonte getting regular at bats in this Braves lineup, but you want to root for a guy like that who's put in a position to, you know, the spotlight's on him right now, because right now that the Braves outfield outside of Ronald Acuña Jr. is kind of a mess, and you want to see a guy succeed in that situation, especially a journeyman guy like that who's not been known to like hit for a bunch of power or be like an offensive force whatsoever. And he's hit really well down in Gwinnett, and to see him produce at the major league level, I was like, you know, that heartened me. And beyond that, you're right. The bullpen was legitimately very, very good.
Yeah, Almonte is almost 32 years old, and journeyman is the right term for it. He's always been on a bunch of teams. He's been a major leaguer for a while, and that's a heck of a career on its own. But so far, in 16 plate appearances, he has a 219 WRC plus with a 727 slugging. So
sustainable.
Very
sustainable.
Well, yeah, obviously. But very, very timely, though. Like, all jokes aside, it's not sustainable. We'll be the first person people to say that. Same thing with Adrianza early in the season was kind of hot, and even Pablo. But the Braves kind of need this kind of weirdness right now with their setup without Ozuna and without Darnold. Like, they can really benefit from a weird hot 2 week stretch from Almonte. Like,
it would be nice to get some good luck.
Sure, and that's yeah. He's been hot, and he's obviously smashing the ball right now, and it's not going to continue. But listen, just ride it as long as it goes, and he tacked on a run, and he had a good game today as well on Sunday. So good on Almonte, who was very not in the plans coming into the season. Well, and on Sunday, obviously Shane Green, that was the news before the game. He did not pitch, but he's now up with the big club. And then Fried, as we talked about before, bounced back with a 6-inning, 1-run performance today. The Braves kind of just score 1 run at a time, nothing terribly flashy. And Albert Pujols, yes, Albert Pujols, first ballot Hall of Famer, drove in both runs for the Dodgers today.
I knew he was going to have like some key hits in the series just because it felt like that was just inevitable. Like, you know, the shell of Albert Pujols. You know, that was the first guy that, you know, Nuka managed to, you know, walk in to load the bases or whatever. You know, the shell of Albert Pujols just couldn't throw a single strike to the guy. But, yeah, you know, I mean, I'm happy for Albert that he's kind of put in a position where he can, like, you know, in his probably, if this isn't his last season, he's getting really, really close. You know, just to kind of see him occasionally put up some decent numbers. I wish they wouldn't do it against the Braves. But,
no.
But other than Pujols, I mean, the Braves really handled the Red Sox on Sunday.
The Red Sox? What's going on here?
Dodgers.
Did you have a blackout? It's fine. I did say that earlier today.
I had a little bit of stroke, yeah.
It's been a long day. It's fine. No, it's, I don't know, the Dodgers, let's just say this. Winning the Dodgers series, you don't want to overstate it, but beating them 2 out of 3 and having a decent chance to sweep them was kind of what the doctor ordered. And it felt like there was a little bit of positive mojo this week at the end of the week. I don't want to overstate that either, but it seems like, you know, there were some upbeat comments, people feeling pretty good. Now they hit the road. Like, if they had gone, you know, 2-5 this week and then have to go on the road this week, it would not have been a whole lot of fun. But they instead took care of business kind of in ho-hum fashion on Sunday, and that was fine. They kind of needed one of those.
Yeah, and this is the team that really can thrive on like really positive energy. When you have guys like Ronnie and Ozzy, Dansby to a certain extent, just kind of, and you know, some young guys on that roster, just having some positive energy in that clubhouse and positive energy in that dugout, like that's going to help, because I mean, you're going to Philly, which is a team you really need to put up a good result against, because they're kind of competing with you for that second place spot. And then you're going against the Marlins, who you really need to beat up on, because you don't want to like have a tough series against the last place team in your division. You know, having some positive energy going into like some big road series, you know, that's good. And you beat a team that is legitimately very, very good in a series, and you beat them convincingly. Like, the Braves were the best team on the field, certainly on Saturday and Sunday. And, you know, Friday was definitely a pretty weird game, but, you know, that was also a very winnable game if, you know, a lot of things had just kind of gone right in one inning. So, you know, overall, you know, there's a lot to take away that was positive from, you know, with the Braves this past week, and particularly the Dodgers series.
Certainly. So at this point, they're 28-29. No one's excited about that, but they're better than they were a week ago. They're in solo second place in the National League East. They're 3.5 behind the Mets, which is not nothing, but not overwhelming either. They're actually 5 out in the wild card, which is what surprised me earlier when we were talking about the NL West team. So the division is, you would think, easier to win than the wild card at this point in time, given where the Giants are, unless they cool off. But anyway, it's still a long way to go. still 100 plus games left in this season, even though it feels like such a slog so far. This week, they're off on Monday. Then they go to Philly for three and Miami for three. Not exactly a treacherous slate, but still road games in the division. Always somewhat challenging. You know, we're in this dog days period now where it's like, all right, they need to keep winning. But also, like, I'm not going to tell you that they have to go 5-1 this week. Like, they go out and go 4-2 and just kind of chip away. I mean, I'm mostly joking about this, but there seems to be like a hard ceiling at 500 where every time I get there, they kind of just fall off a cliff. So that would be the hope, is that they could actually like break through that number at some point in the near future. But all joking aside, they just need to go out and, like, you know, go 4-2 this week. It'd be fine.
Yeah, that Philly series is going to be really interesting because the Philly crowd is not going to be liking any team from Atlanta being in their city.
It is wild that they're going there right now while the Hawks are there. I mean, if you're not a basketball fan, the Hawks are playing in Philly on Tuesday at the same time as Hawks Phillies. I'm sorry, as Braves Phillies. So there will genuinely be an Atlanta Philadelphia brawl in the sporting world on Tuesday night at, again, not kidding, the exact same time in the same city. So that should be interesting. Also, it's Smiley against Nola, which is the worst pitching matchup for the Braves imaginable. So
that's pretty bad, yeah.
That's one. If you're trying to put odds on that one, listen, it's baseball. Nothing is you don't want to overstate it. But if you had to pick a matchup between the Braves and the Phillies, you would not want Smiley versus Nola on Tuesday. So
no, I mean, you know, Smiley no hitter incoming. Obviously, now that we
that's said, I mean, that's fine. Yeah. I'll accept that gleefully. And then it's Davidson Wednesday and Ian on Thursday against Zach Wheeler. That'll be fun. Thursday afternoon game, 1:05. So tough for those of us that have day jobs. But Anderson versus Wheeler should be entertaining, to be sure.
Absolutely, especially like again, other than that stupid inning with the Dodgers. I mean, Ian's looked really good this season, and you know, Zach Wheeler seems to always pitch really well against the Braves. So you know, these three games in Philly are going to be tough. And if they can win that series, like, that helps a whole bunch. Because then you go into Miami, and that's a team that, you know, probably isn't quite ready to, you know, compete with the Braves. You know, have a bunch of young guys who I think are talented, but just maybe aren't quite ready. If you can take that series, it puts you in a really good position to be doing well in Miami. And then you just have to kind of hope that the Mets, you know, continue to find ways to, you know, not try to run away with this division, which they have done, you know. Despite the fact that the Braves have been, you know, they're below 500, they're still in second place, and the division lead is right there. It's not that far off, you know. Just a good week here and a bad week for the Mets, and all of a sudden, this is a really, really close race.
Absolutely, and you know the Braves and Marlins love each other. They have this famed relationship on both sides.
Oh, yeah,
with no history at all.
Just don't hit Acuna with any pitches. I mean, like, I understand that Mattingly has like this like thing that he needs to be able to like establish dominance over a kid who's like raked against him, but just don't do that. Just don't be that guy. And I have no confidence that they're gonna end up doing that. They're gonna probably, you know, like Trevor Rogers or something's gonna like go up and in on Acuna and he's gonna get hit by a pitch and, you know, it's gonna go off the rails in a hurry.
Yeah, hopefully not, but regardless, we'll have plenty to discuss. That'll probably do it for us today, Eric. I'd like you to plug the other podcast that is on this feed and also your other podcast endeavors. We should tell people to share those as well. But Road to Atlanta has been busy. There's plenty of minor league coverage happening daily on the site. That's where I learn of most things in Braves minor league world, including, as we record this, Jesse Franklin had a home run. I was getting tagged by people over and over again on Twitter, which I always appreciate. Bring me your Jesse Franklin @. I'm always a fan of that.
I'm happy that you're getting tagged in those, to be sure. Yeah, Road to Atlanta will be on tomorrow. It's going to be me and Gaurav. We're going to talk about, you know, what Road to Atlanta has been is going to continue to be. It's just going through each level of the minors, you know, who's been performing well and who hasn't been, you know, the various transactions. We haven't seen a ton of roster movement other than Spencer Strider getting promoted over the last, you know, couple weeks. But, you know, that's generally what that show is going to be. And I appreciate the plug on the I'm going to be doing some podcasts outside the Talking Chop world. It's for Believe Podcast Networks. I'm going to be doing three different weekly shows. One's going to be kind of a general Brave show, very similar to this one. It's going to be majors and like major leagues, minor leagues, and then doing a lot of mailbag questions. We're going to do that. We'll do that each week. It's also going to be a sports card collecting show and a general minor league show, not just the Braves, just all over across the league. And Wayne Cavati is going to help me out with that each week. So that's going to be a lot of fun. I'll have more details about that once the streams are kind of more firmly established. I'm waiting for some things on the back end to get done, but make sure you're listening out for that. And this week, in particular, other than the regular minor league coverage that we constantly do, our draft coverage at Talking Chop is ramping up a good bit, with Matt's going to be posting an article about the guys like the day two, day three type guys that he hopes the Ravens target in those kind of later rounds that he likes. So that's kind of something to look forward to this week.
Lots of content on the way. Please subscribe/follow this podcast network. Follow Eric on Twitter machine @Leprechaun. Follow me for mostly Hawk stuff right now, but also the occasional Braves hot take @BT Roland. Follow the site at Talking Chop. Plenty to get to. We'll be back again next week. Road to Atlanta coming, as Eric just said, in the next day or two on this same feed. And we'll see you all next time.
More to-dos, less time, and an infinite number of tools to keep track of. Sometimes doing business has never felt harder, but you don't need a miracle to hit your goals. You can just use HubSpot, because their all-in-one customer platform can make growing your business infinitely easier. Imagine this: high-quality leads, fast closing deals, wildly happy customers, and more benchmark-breaking quarters. It's not a miracle, it's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.